I had to learn something about the subject, and so I found a book. And in fact, the way I found this book is rather interesting. I had a little story about that, and I've gone through this several times. I just reviewed it again, and thought what we might do is spend maybe 15 minutes just letting me review with you the basic elements of this book. Kind of wonder why anybody'd be interested in the world crisis of education. That struck me as people were walking in. What kind of things did you expect to hear? I'll tell you what I'm going to do, and then if that doesn't fit in with what your expectations were, you can leave, and we won't waste your time. But here's what I'd like to do. This book, and I'll show you why, says that there is a terrible crisis in education, and it may even be worse than all the other crises, and it may have a lot to do with all the other things that are happening in the world. This was done by UNESCO, a very, very large study team. A lot of money was spent, some of the highest level people in the world were all involved in this. It has a lot of credibility, at least amongst the educational community. They really buy into this all over the place. And so I thought it would be a good idea to walk through this, just prologue, get the basic concepts. It's a long book, and I don't mean that I go through the whole thing, but I've extracted them, and then at the end, as I always do, I built a model that pulls it all together, at least for me. Maybe nobody else will understand it. And then we can discuss that. I have a couple of things that I'd like to gain out of this session, and this is the major reason. Two reasons I did it. One, so I'd learn this and code, because I'm going to a conference on the international crisis in education. I have to know it. But secondly, I only know the concepts, and I don't really know what's happening in reality, especially in terms of the U.S. education system, the traditional established system. My educational background is in business and industry, primarily. The only place I get involved with secondary and elementary and college systems are in other countries than the United States. That's not completely true, but I've had more experience in the last 2 years in countries like Iran and... Yes?
I heard somebody over here say, who is he and where is he?
I'm going to do that right now.
Okay.
And I'm leading up to that. I'm always back into things, always. And so I get involved in a lot of things like in Iran and Venezuela. My job, I work for Control Data Corporation. And Control Data Corporation is a computer company, but it ceased being just a computer company a long time ago, like 5 or 6 years, because that's a hard business. It's a tough business. We still make a lot of big computers, and we're involved in computer usage, but we went to applications of large computer systems and networks. And as we've evolved, we've discovered that this business, education, will probably be our largest business by 1980. We're going to be in the business of disseminating educational and knowledge kinds of things. And in fact, by the year 2000, and I'm going to give a seminar on this next week, the year 2000, the information and knowledge dissemination business will be the largest business by far in the world. 90% predicted that 90% of all the people in the world will be involved somehow in the generation, dissemination, and helping in the reception of knowledge. That's the biggest revolution that's happening to us, and I'm kind of tipping my hand toward next week and tonight at the forum, but that's the business that probably will, if anything does, will help us get out of some of the problems that we're in now, the knowledge generation and dissemination business. So the company that I work for is really moving very rapidly into this business, but we're moving into it through another means. We're not going directly into the present education system in the United States. We're going into that with which we're familiar, which is business and industry and government. And tomorrow, in my session tomorrow, I'm going to talk a lot more about that, but I'm going to stay with this today. My job is I'm the Vice President of Educational Development, and that means that I develop all of the course materials that we use, or I acquire them from other educational institutions. There I do get involved with universities and colleges. We're involved with about 60 to 70 major colleges in the United States, and my job is to work with them to get hold of the courseware that they do have, or help them develop courseware, and change it back and forth. Courseware now is a new term for educational materials, like software was for computer programming, now courseware. I guess that's been in vogue for quite a while. But there are some terms that we tend to use that I think are somewhat unfamiliar. So that's my background. I started on the staff here about the faculty three or four years ago, and at that time I was working in corrections. That seems kind of an odd switch from corrections to education, but it really isn't. I spent 6 years on the governor of Minnesota's staff, 6 months on the governor's of Minnesota's staff, on loan to him from my corporation, studying the problems of corrections. And in that job, I helped set up an ombudsman system in the prison system. and then worked, headed up a legislative committee studying the problems in corrections and facilities for a year. And as I got into that, I also was pushed into the new techniques in education because I was running all of our education programs in our company. And out of those two experiences, I've evolved into a job that is developing and delivering educational materials, but also looking for ways of solving social problems with new, non-traditional, innovative techniques in education and in communications. But I'd like to lay this crisis out because it's a lot like the other crises. At the forum tonight, we're going to talk about ecology and food and population and those kinds of crises, but we never talk about this much, this crisis, and that's why it's fascinating. But as I say, I have a selfish interest because I've got to know this stuff when I go to a conference where there will be about 1,000 educators from around the world in Venezuela. They're going to have people from Russia and Iran and all around China. Everyone that's interested in the exchange of information and education are going to be at a conference in Venezuela in September, and I have to act smart, so I have had to learn this. And that's what I always do at Holden. I come up and try to learn something about a subject I really don't know, and then get up in front of a group and talk about it like I'm supposed to know what I'm talking about. But I really don't. I think I really want to learn a lot from you. When I present this, my plan is to give you 15 minutes of what's there, and then ask you to tell me how you see in your environment, if you're a teacher or a principal or a school board member or a parent, we all are involved in education, what you see happening and what symptoms you see, or if you don't see any, then maybe it isn't as bad a problem as it looked. I want to have a disclaimer. I said, like the Watergate tapes and this thing's reporting me, a disclaimer. I don't lay claim to any of this because this is a result of a large research project in which I did not participate, and so I don't know whether I agree with it or not. And anyway, they didn't head in any particular direction. They had a few suggestions, but they got as lost as everybody else. So it's not all that bad. But if you want to argue about it, feel free, because I have no vested interest. I'll probably join you in arguing, but half the time. Okay, let me see. I always ask, how many teachers are there in the crowd? So I know what, 1, 2, 3, 4, of course, 5, 6. Oh, that's good. School board members? Okay, we can get them good. no. They have a tough job, they really do. Parents, of course, that's the question. Okay, well, we all have a stake in this thing. In many ways, more than just inside the just inside of the education parameters itself. Let's start out with the history, okay? That's where this thing started. This book started with the history. Back in the 50s and the 40s, everything looked pretty neat. Things were going good. The student load on educational systems, and this is worldwide, was more than doubling, but the costs were also more than doubling. But everybody thought that would come out all right because the systems were not being defeated. In fact, they were overcoming most of the problems they had or ignoring them. And by the end of the 50s, things looked pretty good. And nobody really felt that there was much of a problem except for this thing, which was really more of a symptom than a problem. The problem here, it said, I'll read it to you. Even though we really went roaring into expanding our capacity for educating people around the world, we ended up in 1970 with many more illiterates and a much greater percentage of the total population being illiterate than when we started in 50. 60% of the world's population in 1970 is illiterate, 460 million. That's grown. That has grown in the last 5 to 6 years, so it's getting worse. That's one standard that you can use about around the educational crisis. Okay. Now, let me say a few things about that. National education systems have always been in a crisis. So when you say there's a crisis, everybody says, so what? You know, we've always been there, but we've always been able to lick it. But the real problem behind all this, which has emerged, is a lot more subtle. It's not like the food or the population problem where people are dying or, you know, things are heading down. You can point curves at it and say everything's happening fast and we're going to be in trouble by 1980 if we don't learn to solve this or that problem. It's not quite so obvious. It has something to do with change and adaptation. And what's happened around the educational system is that the other systems have changed very rapidly, partially because of the education system, which has provided them with the tools and the information and technology to go ahead and change. Science and technology, economics and politics, demographics have changed, social structures have changed, and so all the systems around education have been changing, But education itself, the systems themselves, have not changed very much. And in fact, there's some very critical remarks made by many, many people about the fact that it has not changed. And so the real problem, as seen by the UNESCO study, is that there is a disparity between the educational system and its environment, those people around it. Now, the causes are because of a sharp increase in the demand. That demand is going up and up and up and up, faster and faster all the time. And for lots of reasons, which we'll look at in a minute. There is an acute scarcity of resources, which we all know, hear so much about. That scarcity in education is worse, and it's going to worsen in the next 5 years to become almost a disaster unless something happens. There is an inertia in education, and everybody seems to say that's where the problem is. I personally believe it's down here, an inertia in society. Everybody says the education system's at fault, but I don't believe that. I believe it's more down here, and it's hard to tell. You can't cause and effect and all that stuff. But in order to avoid a crisis, there's going to have to be some substantial change. And adjustments by both society and education. They're going to be radical changes, hard to come by. If there isn't enough change, and here's the thing that scared me when I read this book, the growing disparity will crack the frame of the educational systems, and in some cases, the frame of their respective societies as well. About 2 years ago, I did a study for the State Department of Education in Minnesota. I participated in one that looked at the school system in Minnesota, not the colleges, but the secondary and elementary school systems. And we came to that conclusion, which I'll talk about a little bit more, that the way things are tending, if nothing changes, the school systems are going to crack, or whatever you want to call it. And we'll get back to that. This is inevitable because of the demand. The first thing that we talked about was the demand. Let me talk a little bit about the demand on educational systems. First of all, the demand is increasing around the world because the school-age populations are growing more rapidly in most countries worldwide. They're growing very, very rapidly because of lack of birth control and all that kind of stuff. Here's an important one, and in many countries, like Venezuela, which I know more about than any other countries, the have-nots want help. The government in Venezuela knows that if it does not provide training to the have-nots, the people out in the backwoods and all of that, there's going to be a revolution. They will go. They have about 5 years. Every regime has 5 years, and if they don't make significant improvements, zoop, out they go. They make a shot. They usually don't in Venezuela, but some countries they do. Developing nations, in order to really get going and do the things they have to do, whatever they are, whether they're right or wrong, they need a lot of vocational kinds of training right now. And the demand there is heavy, very heavy. And then and connected with that, there's a much more adult continuing education being demanded. This is more in the developed countries, like the United States. This is an onslaught that's coming at education that everybody's worried about. They call it lifelong learning and continuing education and all of those things, but that thing's going to grow so fast. And that, again, is demographic because it's connected to the age in our country. And, of course, there's a huge age shift upward. And within 10 years, the dominant factor in our society are going to be those over 45 or 50 years old. And they're going to be demanding this kind of thing for whatever purposes. And that's rather an interesting thing to look at because the non-formal educational systems have these particular reasons. These non-formal, to me, are more like for continuing education. But it could mean other things. One of the biggest emphases in our country, one of the biggest problems that are talked about, is to ensure employment mobility upward. You know, train yourself so that you can get the next better job, etc. And also retraining or training dropouts from our system who are becoming much more numerous, or at least they're much more obvious because everybody from the Department of Labor to the Department of Education are talking about those. They're ashamed of the problem of the dropout and they feel guilty and they want to assuage their guilt by training them if they can. Of course, here's a big one, teaching trained people new knowledge as doctors, dentists, professionals of all kinds, teachers, lawyers, that there are many, many laws on the books that are going on now that require this to happen. That's a big business, very big business. Then finally, here's one that's hitting us heavily in the United States, and it's improved the quality of life through culturally enriching individuals' expanded leisure time, like we are right here. I thought about this morning, I thought about Holden Village. You remember a few years ago when we were talking, someone was talking about exporting Holden Village to the rest of the world, and sort of get all screwed up and ruined. a lot of people and a lot of corporations have dedicated their objectives to doing this. And that's a big business, too. There's a lot of money there in the United States because of leisure time activities. And people are getting bored with going to someplace like Aspen and skiing and sitting around. They need something more. But they need a Holden Village, but they don't know that. And they don't know where it is anyway. And we don't want to tell them because then they'd all come up here and probably too many people would follow it up. Okay. Now, let's take a look at this. Let me see where I am now. Okay. Education is not a cure for everything. And unfortunately, a lot of people think it's a cure for everything. And that's pointed out in this book. Fortunately, they looked at both sides. Just as it is not the cause of all the problems in the world, although many people seem to think that education is the cause of all the problems in the world. And that's what makes it very difficult to discuss the problems and to be in an education system of any kind. Another point is that education, went from demand to education. I forgot to tell you that. Another problem is that education and all the other systems have a limited amount of time to solve the problems. There's a very limited amount of time, maybe 5 years or less, in order to meet the expectations of society or something's going to go wrong. And there aren't many resources to do that. And now people are also really questioning the credibility of education in general. In the United States, it's becoming more and more obvious to me, and maybe I'm only hearing the lunatic fringe, but I go all over the country all the time and I hear it a lot, on college campuses, everywhere. And they're beginning to think that if education is teaching to blind dogma rather than looking for new ways of doing things, it's really becoming a satire on itself. Here are some of the criticisms, or some of the things, statements, they're not criticisms, they're statements. Education systems aren't searching for self-criticism. There's really have been no new innovations in education since really the third generation, the third revolution, which was the invention of the school system itself, mass production in education. And it's ironic because education has brought the information and technology to other fields that have caused them to innovate. And it is an ambiguous position because it's exhorting everyone else to change but resists innovation itself. That's a neat statement that they had in here. Okay, now, it's a little bit like there is some talk about the analogy between, or similarity between agriculture and education. And I think this is a simple-minded one because education and agriculture are far apart in terms of their complexity. But you recall that, 100 years ago or so, agriculture was made up of just very small family farms who were doing things traditionally as they had done it for hundreds of years, and they had no way of changing, and in fact they were hanging on to those their culturally and historical ways of doing things. And all of a sudden the governments began to put together large research projects, research grants, and discovered new things, and then had a nice communication system directly to the farmer through the various field programs, brought them the information, and then the new technology, the tractors and all the other things that came along, and there was just a huge revolution in agriculture. Many people say, why can't that happen in education? Well, one of the reasons is that because education is probably, some people believe it's the most complex thing that people, the humankind, has tried to do. It's more complex, UNESCO says, than the job of putting people on the moon. That's simple compared to solving the problems of education. That's a scary statement too, because that seemed to be a rather complex task. Maybe it wasn't. But the problems and just the process of education and doing it right is extremely complex. I didn't used to believe that. I thought it was a simple thing that you just went and did. But as I've studied it over the last 3 or 4 years, the more I study it, the more complex it gets because it differs by individual. Every one of us has a different learning style. And the system, if it doesn't respond to our learning style, is likely to turn us off to some extent, or at least not motivate us. Okay. Now, there are many problems. Many countries are trying to change from the elitist system they've had, like developing countries, Venezuela, Iran, all of those had systems where some people got some education, and then some people went on to college with very few. Now they're trying to change to mass systems, and they're having a very difficult time for several reasons. One is because the social structure says that it's good for you to become a dentist or a doctor or an engineer or a teacher. And so the schools are aimed in that direction. But what they really need are plumbers and shipwrights, ship millwrights, and all of those kinds of things that can build the things that they need. Agricultural training, all those kinds of things. Well, the system doesn't want to shift. I was looking at an article yesterday in the Futures magazine. This is a neat magazine, the Futurist magazine. This is the June issue. And they have a section called World Trends and Forecasts on a lot of things. And the one they wrote about education really hit that particular point right on the head. Even though teachers are really needed heavily in developing nations, there's a large growing supply of school graduates that can't get jobs. I mean, this is college graduates that can't get jobs in developing nations. These are educators, these are teachers that are coming out of college for 4 years. And there's just a rapid growth of those kinds of people, while there is a very slow growth in the numbers of people that can do vocational kinds of things. And this happened initially because the system had to decide what to do, and the system decided to put out what it had been putting out before, a lot of engineers and teachers and things like that. And so what's happening now is that the qualification requirements for jobs in education are going up and up and up, so that instead of having to have just a college degree, now you have to have a master's degree in order to get the job. And so everybody with an undergraduate degree is going back to school so they can get the master's degree to get the job. And that means that they're building more and more colleges like this in these small countries and generating more people when they really don't need them. And when Ann and I were down in Venezuela, we were going to a dedication of about the 15th college that they had built down there for just to meet this kind of need. And they didn't need that college. That's the last thing they needed. They needed a lot of vocational schools, which we're helping them set up now. But they've got to cater to the demands of the people in the countries that have the power, which are the middle class, which have the kids that they want to go on to go into the professions rather than into the vocational schools. And so developing countries are thus failing to provide a relevant education for many who must necessarily remain in the traditional sector. Okay, that was the end of that one. There are many countries that have that problem. I think most of them do. Iran certainly does, and they're complicated by the tribal problems that they have. They not only have these kinds of things, but each tribe within Iran has its own kind of thing. It needs something different than everybody else. And so when we go out to set up a vocational school in one spot, we set up a different kind of school, even though it's teaching the same thing, than we do in another spot of the country, because we have to kind of get in with the culture itself. Okay, now let me see where I am. Oh yes, I'm coming up to the next thing. I've talked about demand, educational systems. I found a very interesting statement about the educational system by a guy named Peterson in a book called The Future of Education. And he said this. He said, education has one advantage over all other social activities. It has lagged so far behind the changes in society as a whole that we already know that it at least needs considerable adaptation before it is relevant even to the society in which we're now living. And that's all. That's so far. It's funny, almost, except it's not. Okay. So there's a lot of criticism like that coming out all over the place. Must be 20, 30, 40 books written in the last year. Now, let's take a look at some of the other problems, though. Because I think that education is really becoming the whipping person for all the other things that are going on. But here we get down, I think, to the guts of it all, the economics and the politics. The costs are going up very rapidly. Inflation and increased demand, and as part of that, working in the other direction, there's a less share of the gross national product available for education. That percentage is going to go down from now on, and as people get more angry at what's going on, there's going to be less and less money available for it. Now, that switches over into politics, where the taxpayers resist, management is quitting, the teachers resist, and the system tends to decay or split. I've watched a taxpayer revolt in the town where we come from several years ago, and that's not much fun. People do some rather rash things, and they make things happen that are dysfunctional, not always, but generally. While I was in Denver a few weeks ago, the biggest, hottest news story was that about 50% of all the school board members in the state had quit their job because they didn't get anything out of it. They were getting hassled by the state and the federal officials, and they just said the heck with it. Unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, these were the people that had been around a long time and had the system under control. Maybe something will happen now that they've left. I don't know. You can look at it either way. Teacher resistance movements, of course, are very, very, very much in the news. That's the biggest thing you hear about this whole thing. Albert Shanker from New York City is one of the most erudite speakers. 25,000 teachers were laid off in New York City in June. And that may not be a big percentage of their total, I don't know, but 25,000, a lot of people. And the teachers are going to resist this like mad. As costs go up, that's about the only place the system can give, apparently. Okay, now let me go on to the next one. Now, one of the things that the UNESCO study talked about, why don't they look at quality and cost? The other thing on a worldwide basis that's being perceived, that as the cost per pupil goes up, you would expect an increase in quality. The other thing is happening. I don't mean quality of teachers or anything else like that, quality of the output of the system. Less people can read. That's a real funny thing in the United States. There are more and more high school, greater percentage of high school graduates coming out every year that are functionally illiterate. That could be because we're measuring that more carefully, but I don't think so. In the last 3 or 4 years, they've used the same measurements, done the same techniques, and they're becoming more and more can read less and less, high school graduates. That is what the UNESCO study talked about. They were talking about dropouts from the system and the failures of the system completely, like in India. India's had a system where everybody can come, and it's been just a disaster because everybody can, at least that's what the UNESCO study said. It may have improved since then. So this is what people perceive anyway. If you're a parent or a school board member and watch this going down and that going up, you're going to get upset, particularly that. But that too. So we must, my conclusion after reading all this, when I got to this point before I jumped to the next chart, was we must find a way to meet the large demand, increasing demand, economically and politically, and politically may be the biggest stumbling block of all, in the face of a rigid system that doesn't really want to change. Okay. Now, I put all this together in one big chart. There you see it for the first time. In the middle is education getting squeezed. The education itself is characterized by resistance to change, by teachers' unions becoming more and more militant, increased failure and dropouts. Down here on the political side, there's a demand for an increasing number of students, and it's not taking place, so there are going to be revolutions or overthrows. Adult continuing education is going to put a heck of a squeeze on our Congress. There was a little bit of a fight. Well, there's a fight over the lifelong learning bill right now. It did pass. I believe it got past the House and the Senate, and President Ford's going to veto it. It's going to go back in, and the House will override it for sure. Did that happen?
Of course.
He will. He will. I don't know if it happened yet, but it's... It's probably waiting until after the convention to do that. Then this is the have-nots wanting more than they have had in the past. And then finally, on the economic side, there's the growing cost and competition for a share of resources. This is tough. The highway lobby in the United States is going to take more and more from the educational system. Boom, that's happening in Minnesota, at least. Okay, things like that. We're going to want other things. We have to set our priorities. But behind all this is the fact that if that system cracks and fails, then a lot of other things are going to go to pieces too. Okay, that's the end of what UNESCO said the problem was. That far. Okay. Now, got some questions I'd like to ask you and see how you react to them and what you see from your perspective. First of all, what evidence do you see around where you are of the system that cracking or falling apart? You know, just this is where I'd like to learn now, because I need some examples and things like a storm.
You come to these dilemmas, and with the whole affirmative action thing comes in here too, which was a squeeze on us. But what do you do when you have students and you bring this who can't write and read well, and you bring this problem to the dean, and he says, "Well, we're going to have to do remedial reading." Well, that's not the place to do it. Graduate school is not the place to do remedial reading. So, you're letting in a bunch of people because, and most of our students are professional people. Who do have big jobs, you know, you can't turn down the mayor's assistant.
That's true, too. That's the problem.
So,
I was talking to your president, or the head of your math department, and his biggest problem this year, I was at a cocktail party, but I think he was telling the truth. no, not cocktail party, might be, but was the fact that kids that were coming in to become mathematicians didn't know enough about basic math concepts to do it. And so they're having to give them remedial problems, and his problem is really political because he always hands the job of remediating to the youngest professor in the totem pole who absolutely hates it. And, you know, he just threatens to quit and do all those good things. And that's happened. And I can think of 10 universities that I've been at this year where that problem seems to be first and foremost on the minds. The kids coming in for anything. They can't read. Half of them can't read. half of them don't know how to learn, which is even worse. Yes, sir.
I think the university, I teach at university, I've been there for about 10 years, so I think what you described is really what's happening. I think what's happened is the ideals of education have been really sold out, and there's a very strong vested interest pressure, particularly at the university level. Universities after bucks, and that's it. And the students see this, and they become rather cynical. Okay, that's the game you play. I gotta go get my union card. That's the degree. That's their attitude toward the education. And the whole system goes down. You have very strong vested interests. You have your faculty who really do try to do interdisciplinary work, get penalized for it. Those are the real societal problems that we have to face. And people who really get out get very cynical about it. For example, in economics, if you go out and you start studying, and you begin to find out that the old free enterprise system isn't working quite as well as we would like to say, if you say that in a publication, you're zapped. You can go through the engineering curriculum, and you can see whole programs in nuclear engineering, you can see highway engineering, industrial engineering. Try and find one course in a state university on solar heating of houses, or technology applied for lower consumptive society. You don't get it. You just don't get it. And part of the reason, there's no money in it. The universities have to survive for money. And so they do it, and I think what happens is your faculty become highly specialized in very narrow, vested interest areas. Those that don't, that become interdisciplinary, usually become very cynical. The students see that, and they're just practicing what's being taught to them. So I wouldn't blame the students.
I hope that solar energy thing, you just rung a bell. I don't mean to pick that up, but I was looking at this Futures magazine, and I was amazed at the number of solar energy heating units that have gone into homes. 160,000 units in 1974 alone were sold in Japan. But nobody's doing anything about it in this country.
Yeah, this is an amazing thing. We take some of our tremendous resources in a university, for example, and put it into something like nuclear energy, which I'm not saying we shouldn't. But you take something else that isn't pushed by a large vested interest, like individual solar heat, and it's just neglected. And despite the fact that it may be even more economical than the stuff we've been pouring.
Well, then you run into the resistance of lobbies who don't want you to cut into their thing. Dave?
Well, Dick, isn't one indication of a major crack the terrific amount of adult education that is taking place in non-university-based facilities like Control Data and all of the other organizations that originally were not chartered as educational organizations?
Yep. But because the universities and other systems didn't meet our needs,
right,
we set up our own programs. And now we're going into competition with them, in a sense.
Right.
Not necessarily in competition, but maybe. Or more likely partnerships. Again, something I don't want to get into tomorrow, but I've got some partnership things going. Yes, Ben.
Can I say something about matter and health?
Good.
Wait. I think I'd buy everything that was said, but I would not, warts and all, on the educational system from pre-kindergarten through the graduate programs. The best of interest, yes, but I'd like to turn that around and say that everything, go back to that education system thing you had.
Oh, you mean the
it was a back. That was the title of the one of the pages.
This one?
Yeah. Okay.
You just didn't like that because of the art comp.
No, I say they're all true, but you've left out the heading. It's not education systems. It's society. You said this in the very beginning.
I said
whole
society.
Clue.
Like it, yes.
Now go to the next page.
That's
sir. Okay. Yeah. Less dollars available. That's nonsense. We've got all the money we want. We have already made the decision not to spend it that way. That's all. So
that's right.
When you then go to the next page,
that's all existence. That's all it be.
And you get the quality going down. Quality hasn't gone down. We have just redefined what quality is. We don't want that kind of stuff anymore. So I get burned about that. The quality has not gone down. We do have enough money. We just don't want to put it there. We've made our decision that we're not going to have an adequate system, but we haven't said it that way. We'd rather have other things. But then you don't complain about the inadequacy of the system because you didn't want it in the first place.
Quality has gone down. That's
no, it hasn't. You measure it differently.
What level are you speaking of? college level or...
I teach at college.
No, yeah.
And I have all the same problems. I get kids all of a sudden who can't write, who 5 years ago could write. But I don't say the quality's gone down. What I say is, that's not the way we measure it anymore. Education isn't interested in that kind of thing, so we have a new kind of quality.
Well,
now, I don't buy what it is, but that's what we say.
Dale, education's never been accountable before. It's never been measured before.
It's what?
Education has never really been measured before.
The word quality was going to scare everybody because we've never identified that as one of the values. The value is getting a job, and I'll take a debate with that. That is not the function of the educational system from beginning to end. It's not the function. It's not supposed to
but
be.
That's
right,
one of,
but that's what happens.
Yeah. So we get all in a hassle.
That's going to be one of the biggest issues of the next 5 years, though, is what is the purpose of the education institution? Liberal arts training or vocational? And vocational is beginning to win.
Well, you're going to have to then get a basic definition of what education is.
Yes. And it's everything. It's
okay,
everything.
But now we have children that are just finishing the grade school level. And in the Seattle area, exactly what has happened. You've shown exactly, in a way, what has happened financially, is they wanted more money, and in Seattle, and I don't know how it is in other areas around the country, but the financing of the primary education is done by property taxes. And in the area that we live, finally the taxpayers discovered, maybe a little late, that their children couldn't read or write or spell or do any of these, but you couldn't spoke. It's been the old way of defining education, that you should have the basic 3 R's, and suddenly they don't. They may have a lot of other things, but they don't have the basic 3 R's. Suddenly decided, if you can't teach them, why should we pay you?
Industry is saying the same thing. I have the problem of having people come to me that I have to employ that can't really function well because they haven't learned to read and write. And I say, I pay taxes. No, that's not me, but that's what industry is being held to.
Well, what happened in our area was when the levies failed, because Seattle also operates on a special levy situation on property taxes, is the levies failed and the property taxes dropped by 50%. And suddenly you began wondering, wow, what are you getting for 50% of your property taxes? When they also have a whole lot of other problems in our areas in the grade school.
Yeah.
The drug problems, they're immense. And there seems to be a lack of discipline, so a lot of the schools are just wild places to go. And the behavior is strange.
I think it goes, all the way back to society, to family, to parents, to, parents having kids a lot of times before they know what they're doing. And I'm at the end of a deal where I get all the problems of kids and juvenile delinquency, emotionally disturbed kids, and I think the parents, yes, we've got teachers that are incompetent and maybe doing a lousy job, but I also think that as parents, there's a responsibility to go to the teachers to help them, to make them live up to what they ought to be doing. And, a lot of kids that get into trouble, they don't know how to read and to write, and then neither do they have a family then to help them to learn, and then they get in trouble, and...
We're going to talk about that tomorrow. Come on back. I'm going to talk to you about some of the things I've been doing in that area that I don't know if they're going to work or not, but we're trying them. That's really true. Really.
Yeah.
Yes?
I think related to that, with their preschool education, for example, for parents, with no education or no know-how to raise kids, now instead of spending our money on the negative side, when they get to be juvenile delinquents, why not start a preschool education where you're giving parents positive ways of raising children at that age rather than waiting until later on?
Absolutely.
It really takes a lot of energy to be a good parent. And for me, it's been studying with PET or drivers that kind of.
Well, I really get turned on by that. I've been running a daycare center now for 6 or 7 years, and I've watched kids from the inner city come in there, and their environment just goes, whoosh. Those kids, I watch them now, they're up in the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th grades, and they're just doing super. Whereas the kids around that haven't been getting this art, it's not a real controlled experiment. But it does have an impact, and the parents get involved. They have to go through the same kind of experience, pretty much, and they learn a lot. Anne talks about that in her class in parenting, too, or have you, I don't know. Maybe. That's a good subject, too. You could go for 2 more days. Yes, Dave.
Dick, you mentioned that there were a number of critical documents coming out now.
Yes.
Are these coming from the educational system itself, or are they coming from sources external to the system?
All over the place. It's just a proliferation of stuff from everyone. A lot of it, I can't even characterize any particular segment. The this conference in Venezuela that I'm going to go to is just that. It's going to go over all the problems of education. And these are primarily educators or educational managers. The guys that really run the systems from different levels of the government like for instance, the commissioners of education from several different states in the United States are going to be there. The head of education from Russia, Iran, Saudi Arabia, all of the South American countries, all over, those kinds of people will be there. Plus a lot of first line type people, the school teachers themselves. But they all are writing about it. And then outside the system, there are people, who's outside the system? I don't see many people outside the system. I'm not outside the system.
Who's the book we read? We've been discussing it at the village all summer, but the leaders of the discussion have gone. Ron Vignier, Ron is...
The Night is Dark and I'm...
That's the title, yeah. The Night is Dark and I'm All Alone.
I'm far from home.
By a guy whose name starts with a K. It might be in the bookstore. He clobbers the educational system by saying it functions so well. It does things so beautifully. That's the mistake. Because what it's doing is no good. We shouldn't complain that it's not doing it well. It's doing it the way the plan is. The plan is wrong.
Right.
And he's from outside. He had taught in the Boston school system and got very much involved with their problems. And you should read this. The bookstore might have a copy. And if this gets exciting, talk to Ron. He'd be delighted to have you be involved with another discussion on that.
What's it like on the first line, though? And Carol, I just wanted to hear some of your comments.
You talking about New Guinea?
No. well, either place, Los Angeles and New Guinea. There may not be much difference.
Yeah, I've got some reactions. In New Guinea, I think the school system will crack. In a fair amount of time, it'll have the Australians and the region, and the school system will have to be pushed out, and then I think things will happen for the good. It's a very rigid academic system. And for instance, because of the ranking, there's a constant cutting off at which point, 50% go on to the next,
yes,
and the rest,
yes,
drop out. By the time they get to the Form 4, which is equivalent to our 10th grade and from which they go to the university, about 6 to 10% only go on to the university, and the rest are that's the end of their education. And since they have had such wonderful courses as trigonometry and calculus all together and the 8 periods of English per week and things like that, and that are totally useless in the village, and the government wants them to go back to the village if they don't go on to the university instead of sticking around the town, things are going to have to change rapidly.
Right.
They need more vocational training. I think that the church ought to do something along those lines. I think there ought to be a massive curriculum change, and I tried to lay those ideas in a few people's heads that might still be around in a few years. But that's the game. In Los Angeles, and one of the things that I see on this quality going down and cost going up and things like that is I think there's a great disparity between what government agencies and school board people see as what education is all about, and what teachers see and education all about, and what the general public sees as education. For instance, I think that it's rather significant that the OBO and HEW right now have control of what's going to happen. The Los Angeles City School System. Nobody knows I'm here because I didn't want anybody to know I'm here. So I don't know what's happened since June. But in the last week of school, in Los Angeles, we drew a lottery system 4 months of the year and used the last number of the Social Security card as the method to transfer teachers to schools where they would improve the racial balance. On no other basis was the quality of education is going to go down. Imagine, say, a science head of the department who gets transferred to another school and some new guy coming in who maybe isn't even a science teacher, having to order for the department. No.
By and large, all of the research I've read about busing and equalizing education by transferring teachers has failed, in fact, quality has failed. I have some stuff that I've been doing personally that I'll talk about tomorrow that shows ways of transporting education that has improved significantly the quality of education. So there's some solutions to all these problems. That one really, really hit me hard when you told me about it yesterday, because I went to an Urban Coalition conference in Detroit where I discovered, much to my surprise, that the coalition, which is predominantly black, had decided that busing and all this other stuff is for the birds, because the quality is going down. We really want our kids to learn first, quality and all that stuff later, but the kids have got to learn, and they are. It's getting worse. So they're all for this these new techniques, and we've got some projects with me now.
Yeah, maybe two other things. One is that in Los Angeles, they have now initiated a test for students to be examined and have a high school equivalency. This is not the GED. That is the old test that used to be given to 18-year-olds in order to give them a high school diploma after they're 18, especially for military people. But this is a new test. You have to be over 16 and under 18, and you supposedly get a diploma, which allows for early dropout. And then the whole question, I kind of think that the wrong people take the test and pass it, but the ones that you'd like to quit, they flunk it because they don't know the right things to pass the test once they get on the percentage. But it seems to me that one of the things that the public keeps demanding is, back to the 3 R's, and it doesn't take, or it shouldn't take,
maybe
we
are
in compulsory education.
Well,
I personally think that.
There's some new stuff on that, too, that I've been working on some research on that whole business of literacy. Mm-hmm. It's a hard nut to crack, but I think we're cracking it.
Yeah.
Talk about that, too. It's just about time to go eat. Let me show you what the UNESCO study came up with as some solution. This was 5-6 years ago. Rather interesting to look at.
Have you designed this as a total unit, somewhat unrelated to what you want to do tomorrow?
No.
Because if you wanted to, you could just stay. There's a so-called noon conversation in here at 12, and anybody who wants to go to second sitting can just stay and continue this conversation.
Oh, fine. That'd be okay with me. Yeah, this doesn't feed into 12. Tomorrow I'm going to talk about some solutions, not total solutions, but some things that are going on that I've seen and I'm involved in that are working, potentially. There's some real good stuff that's happening. The problem is, how does it happen? Let me just show you their ideas about it. And they've made it seem a little naive now after 5 or 6 years of finding some things out. But this one was rather interesting. I hadn't thought about it before. Reduction of the cost of schools themselves. If you're going to have a school, figure out how to build it cheaper. And there's some neat things happening there. I didn't think about it. Some architectural stuff. Where's the architect here? Anyway, there's some really neat things going on. And if you're going to have a school, build it cheaper and better. And it can be done. These huge monumental costs we've been spending are not necessary. Redeployment and intensive use of space by different kinds of people, use it long. I think there's another part, using it more during the day. But if you've got space, use it in different ways. One of the things we've been doing is sharing space with educational systems. Open learning systems have been renting school systems, rooms around the country. Lengthening of school hours. In Michigan, I'm involved in an experiment that cuts across several of these things. At the end of the school year, Michigan does have a really good measurement of people's achievement in math. And in English, and in the fifth grade and seventh. We're working with fifth graders, many of whom, about half of them, do not achieve a passing level by the end of the school year. They haven't for the last 2 years, and so the parents get, when they come home, the kid brings a big long list of things that says what he doesn't know. And the parents get all upset. They call the school, and there's only one person there, the principal. He's got nothing to do with them. He doesn't know what to do with them. So what we're putting in are some new systems for teaching these kids during the summertime. And it's going to run 16 to 18 hours a day. So we get full utilization of the materials and the equipment and the resources, and we get the parents involved. Some little kids like that ought not to be up at 10 at night, but we bring the parents in and have them involved too, doing things like parenting. Sharing of expensive facilities and specialized personnel.
This is very important. I do this in industry all the time. I can't afford to have a PhD in some particular kind of thing full-time myself, so I find three or four other people who will share that person or that facility, and off we go. Industry is really getting into that. I noticed that the Xerox Corporation has one of the largest industrial training facilities in the world, and now they're beginning to share it with people because it's too expensive for them to run. They have all the costs. Sharing high-cost university program. This is between countries. This one is aimed at more like if Harvard has something that's really expensive and getting more and more expensive for them to run, they'll get a country like Venezuela or Iran to share the cost and maybe transport it down there. Use of teacher's aides, of course, we've been doing that for quite a while, I guess quite effectively. I don't know for sure, but the administrative and the other things, freeing up the teacher. This big concept, freeing up the teacher to become more of a manager and a tutor and things like that, to get on a one-on-one individualized basis. So anything we can do there, I think, is necessary. The teacher's role is changing, by the way, but I think it's changing much for the better to allow a teacher to be much more of a creative person rather than just a spitter out of knowledge. Greater emphasis on well-planned self-instruction, which I'll talk about tomorrow. Increased expenditures on learning aids, and I'll talk about that tomorrow. Application of modern management practices. I think this is something that's extremely important, although there's a lot of resistance to change here. However, there have been, Dave, I suppose you've been involved in the school system with this, haven't you?
Not really. Well, honestly, Dick, we've kind of avoided it.
It sounds like our strategy. We avoid the school system because there's so much resistance to change.
Exactly.
It's not worth the marketing effort to try to get in.
Exactly. It's just like hitting a brick wall.
And you might get sucked in and then get wiped out. That's happened to me a couple of times. Consolidation of small schools. This is really wild, not in the United States, but in many small countries are building up all these little tiny mini universities that cannot survive economically or educationally, but they're doing it for the middle class. We did that for a while in this country, like in Kansas and Nebraska, when there was an overload of kids wanting to get into schools on the East Coast. They built a lot of small schools in Kansas and Nebraska, and they all went defunct, boom, just like that, about five or six of them. Someone tried to get me to buy one of those a few years, and I couldn't believe the thoughts that went into that. There was very little thinking. Well, we see in Minneapolis, St. Paul, the small colleges there are all merging together, and within a few years, if they don't merge, they're going to go out of business, and two or three of them will be out of business in 2 years anyway, two or three. Rationalizing the location and size of schools. This means, putting a school where it ought to be in terms of the need. And this can range from having an open university where there is no location to a thing, again, like we're going to be doing in Michigan, where you locate the learning center or learning activity in a General Motors plant, for instance, so that an assembly line worker coming off his job doesn't have to go to a school which he didn't like anyway because he was a dropout. He can go into the classroom or maybe even go home, take the course, drink his beer, do whatever else he wants to do for a half an hour or an hour. And do it there. Moving educational facilities around in vans, mobile vans, out into the backwoods, like on Indian reservations. We've been doing some of that. In Venezuela and Colombia, there's a large program of moving education out into the farming communities and teaching all sorts of things, agriculture, medical, literacy, etc. I think that's it. All right, that's tomorrow. I won't show you that. So I'd like to give you one more pitch. There's a pitch at the end of this book, one sentence. They say, whatever shapes your educational system may, whatever shape it's in, if others which must serve the vast majority of this planet's citizens are in serious condition, then no nation, however rich, can be exempt from the consequences. The educational crisis is everybody's problem. And it really is. Tomorrow, I'd like to invite you back to talk about some of the new educational, non-traditional techniques and programs that I've been involved in and others have been involved in, that will maybe take some of the pessimistic part of this away and talk about some of the things that probably will happen and are happening. There's some very exciting things going on. And so I think in education, there may be some cracking in the system, and maybe pretty hard cracks, but there are some answers, I think, that will take place. Maybe we can predict that a little bit tomorrow. Yes, ma'am.
Are you familiar with the Learning Disabilities Program in Minnesota?
Oh, yes. Very, very, very much so. I'm right up to here. I've had it for 3 years. Just got a contract with HEW. To automate a series of things for the state.
I'm an SLU.
Are you? Where at?
Albert Lea.
Ah, okay. That's what I'm thinking about. Sure. Very exciting stuff.
Thank you.
You bet.